Blog Talk Radio.
And hoping that my co-host is going to join me. I'm really concerned that my landline, again, has failed me. So we were having technical difficulties. And, of course, I'm doing one of the biggest cardinal sins right now, which is using the celly. And but because I did, I wanted to continue the program from last evening, I decided to take the chance and do it. And hopefully, I'm just going to go on a prayer because that's all I got right about now. And hopefully things are going to pan themselves out and we're going to make this work. We were talking with Maddie Brown, and we were talking about the state of the mental health division, the department, I should say, organization, the mental health field. And we even took it closer to home with the with her sharing of the of a situation that she was experiencing with her family from the beginning of her life up until this very day, and her experiences with mental illness and with the mental health field in general. most people at this point don't have a lot of faith, I should say, in our mental health facilities. And because, in fact, I even heard a person say, what's the difference between a schizophrenic saying that he hears voices and Abraham saying that he's going to deliver his son and make him the ultimate sacrifice for God, and that was the voice that he heard in his head to tell him to take his son and make him a sacrifice? And it was a pretty good question because I couldn't answer it. I was like, you know what? Sounds like Abraham was schizophrenic as well. I mean, there was no other way to look at it because he heard a voice, and that voice told him to do just that, to take his son up to the mountains and to kill him. I mean, whoa. So, you know, it depends on how we look at this thing here that we're calling mental health. And it depends on how we're seeing it. And that's commercial or exploitative mental health. When you really begin to get older and when you really begin to understand that life is more than tits and ass and booties and nuts and penises, you begin to really examine some of the things that are important, some of the characteristics, some of the ways that you can make yourself a better person, a better husband, a better wife, a better lover, a better partner. Those are the things that become much more important. And as you encounter in people on your journey, you're going to encounter some stuff that some things you can explain and some things are unexplainable. And that's why somebody said to me, how can you explain the unexplainable? There's no way. And with this mental health thing, I think if more people, specifically people who are behind the eight ball, will get more in touch with their individual self first instead of trying to conquer the world, then maybe the world will be conquered and the ills of the world will be healed. Because I think Michael Jackson said it best when he said, I'm starting with the person in the mirror. As I've been healing from a relationship that made me examine my narcissist ways, and unknowingly I ran into a person that was more narcissistic than I was. And that relationship taught me so much because it was a relationship built in fear. And I could see, you know, the fear-based way I was responding to the relationship, the abuse that I took. It was amazing. So those are the things that, you know, you have to examine when you are in a relationship, when you are in a situation. Our co-host is on the line right now, and I'm going to see if I can get them in. However, I'm not getting a chance to explain the timing on this thing. Hi, is that you, M. Brown? How are you this evening?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm doing
boy.
Good.
We
yes.
are so glad that we got you in here. I was just telling the audience, they got us in. We got in so fast that I think I'm hoping that everything goes okay and you can still kind of remember the information that you were going to bring to us. And we were so entrenched. I guess you stopped last night. For everybody that had a chance to join us last night. We're back with Maddie Brown, and she was explaining to us just some of the, sharing with us actually some of the things that just go on pretty much in the mental health field, that if you are not a person that examines what you're doing and what they're doing to you, then really you are not being proactive in your own health. And because she has a history of mental illness, or what they say mental illness, I always say challenges or emotional challenges, and because she has such a bad, she shared with us last night what most doctors were saying in terms of if they treat somebody and the medication that they were treating people with. And her, this particular case was her sister being, if I can remember correctly, being treated with a drug, and it was, even though it was got having an adverse reaction to her diabetes, they weren't really concerned with that. They were just concerned with her behavior being modified. So just the double, am I right in saying that, Maddie?
Yes, it's the name of the medicine. It's
Seroquel. Seroquel, oh, exactly. And that's the one that I believe that they start recalling or something to that effect, and they start saying that anybody that had that drug, they were entitled to lawsuits. Is that the one?
Yes. They did a Class A lawsuit with several people, my daughter and sister was part of it, where they got a small amount of money. My sister got more money because she had a double bypass.
A double bypass from taking the meds?
Yeah, it affected her. And she was the one that they was giving the medication to modify her behavior, although they know that it would raise her blood sugar.
Oh, my God. And then you mentioned that there was a daughter, I think you said, that was normally weighing 135 pounds, and that they ended up being maybe over 200 pounds more.
Right, right. She had gained over 100 and some pound more than her normal weight that she carried from taking this medication. She had gone from like maybe a 150 to almost 300.
Insanity.
And that's
just the point. Is that healthy? I mean, so what do? You trade, are you more concerned with managing my behavior, but then you give put all this pressure on my heart or other organs of my body? I mean, is really one helping the other? I have a hard time seeing the logic in that. Maybe it's just me. I mean, you know what I mean? I have a hard time finding, this doesn't make any sense to me. So can you finish that story when you were saying that you had a sister? I don't know if we can take off kind of like we're, and she was in the hospital. Okay. Let's take off from right there if we can.
She was in the hospital and her behavior was out of control with the nurses. So the doctor ordered her some Seroquel to modify her behavior. And when her blood sugar went up, I pushed the doctor about it. And the doctor was more important about her behavior than it was her blood sugar.
Oh, my goodness.
So she felt like being a diabetic, it's running in most black families, so, you know, it's hard for you to really say it's the medication, because if you have a history of diabetes, then they want to blame it on the history. But it's most of this medicine for depression or for mental challenges have great side effects. And the lawyers and the state are making money off of these people because they know this medication has that side effect, and they'll come up. Only so many people can be in this suit before they close it down. And the medication continues to be administered to the people's. So,
And so is this medication basically being given to, you know, our poor and under and underemployed? I should say underemployed, because I don't want to say now unemployed, because you have people now, you have so many working poor people today that you have to just say underemployed. You know, so.
Well, most of these people are, yeah, they own disability and unemployed, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to have a program to really work with them to help them realize that this illness they have is a behavior problem, and help them to learn the right standard way of behavior that is more accepted than their way.
Absolutely.
They only want to medicate them, you know. They control them with the medication.
And have them like zombies to a certain degree.
Well, yeah, the medication have great side effects to most of the people where they are like zombies. They pace and they smoke cigarette after cigarette. It's hard for you to communicate with them.
You know, I thought about, and we had mentioned earlier before you called in, and I think it was, you said one of your relatives or your grandson or someone you mentioned.
Yes.
We talked about how if we were to speak about a schizophrenia and what are the symptoms of it, then that means everybody in the Bible was schizophrenic. And I thought that that was a real, real profound statement from a person who has mental health challenges. That was the most intelligent. So I want people out there that's under the sound of our voices. In fact, if you want to call in, feel free. Number is 310-982-4136. I want to challenge you with that thought for a minute. A diagnosed schizophrenic person said to his grandmother, "Well, if I'm schizophrenic because I hear voices, what about all of these prophets and all of these so-called shamans and great men in the Bible who profess to have heard voices? Why weren't they placed on Seroquel and prednisone and all these other risperidols and, you know, just a conglomerate of psych medicine?" Well, because, of course, we didn't have them. But what is the difference? And I'd like for anybody out there, if they could come up with an answer to that, we'd really appreciate it. But go back to what you were saying, man. We would.
Well, my grandson, he believed the same way that the Bible does, because he feel that that's the only way most of the prophets hear God talking to them, by hearing the voices.
Okay.
And he doesn't feel that them talking to his voices, and they are friendly.
But you know, if you
voices,
told a minister that, and then if he told you that he heard God speaking to him, and if you was to ask him was he a schizophrenic, he would actually be angry with you. He would actually be, if you would ask a minister, "Are you schizophrenic? Because you say you heard voices, you know, the voice of God." I mean, he would really consider himself and have been insulted by you. And that's why I thought that your grandson was so profound in his statement. Because it reminds me of another one was, go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Although that his delusions and stuff that are real to him, and I know they are not true. So that's where the problem comes in with the person like schizophrenia, because
I'm just like Jonah in the belly of the whale.
Right, they don't want to accept that they have this problem, and then if they do, he feel that he shouldn't be medicated. He feel that why medicate him? You know, because he
But do you think everybody that is having mental ill challenges need to be on medication, or do you think it's a way that we can get to the bottom of these mental health challenges without being medicated with all these? Some people believe that if you just change your complete change of diet.
I think and having a round the table group that, you know, that let people express themselves instead of medicating them up. And maybe some of them do need medication. But if you could bring them in a group where, and not even supposed to have this. But some people's got to have schizophrenia, have no motivation, interest. So sometimes you got to come and get them and lead them, you know, as old people say, you lead the horse to the water. It's up to the horse to drink it.
Okay.
But having more compassion.
Show a little bit more compassion, but you know, and I guess in this world full of, you know, action, causation bound, everybody moving so fast, it's like, you know, that is the heart of it. Where is the compassion? I think it's easier to just give them a bunch of pills and just go, okay, here, go, bye. You know?
Or make them try to. You know, although this disease, say these people cannot make clear decisions and stuff, but yet the system say they got to make these decisions. So if I can't do something because of deficiency, how can you force me to do it without me becoming angry and maybe violent towards you, because you're forcing me to do something that I don't know how. You're not showing me. You're just telling me I got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if they haven't, and if they've been out there and not in a position to have, you know, even, you know, everybody, like you say, has different experiences. So some people are more, it's not a one-size-fit-all. And sometimes you have to work with the individual where he is, as opposed to having one size fit all, saying, meaning you go here, take this step, and then go to this step, and if you can't do this step, then you're going to be X'd out the program or yada, yada, yada. Well, if you got different people with different challenges, maybe it should be more tailor-made to meet a person's challenge.
Exactly, right? And we don't have a system to do that. To work with an individual, to see what their needs are, or then what's going on with them. So you have a person that doesn't have a mama in his life nor a father in his life. So, you know, there you go. Now he have these deficiencies, these challenges going on. And nobody wants to touch him. It's almost like having a bad disease. You know, the only thing that they can do for you is medicate you up and get your mind controlled where you're not able to express your true feelings and stuff. If you're not disabled, by the time the system gets through with you, you will be disabled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the long-term effect of it is just has to be, you know, pretty detrimental, you know. And especially when you think about a body that's not fully developed. Because if you start thinking about some of these people starting to get on these drugs, psychotropic drugs, at 6 and 7 years old, scientific fact now that your brain continues to grow until you're 25, then you are actually growing up. They are actually, you know, doing a lot of, to me, damage in growing people up in this type of environment where the brain is still growing, but yet you're feeding it these type of, you know, medications. I think that's That's a danger for me, it would seem.
And right. And,
I don't think
and
that's a concern of the health field, though. I don't think that's a concern for them.
And having the surrounding be ignorant to the fact there are challenges, you know, that's the problem going on. Because most people doesn't understand that with the person until they feel they have bad behavior.
So what do you think? What do you think in your opinion? You know, and I guess we're not talking about people that need, you know, I guess a lot of restriction or maybe just a lot of supervision. But people that are not violent, who are out here, what in your estimation, of course, besides the basics of food, clothing, and shelter, what in your estimation are they in dire need of in terms of services, in terms of, you know, that would be helpful for that mental health?
I think a resource center activity type setting for these people will really help them because it's the focus that they seem to be dealing with. They can't seem to hold focus for a long time. But there's something that could interest them. You know, maybe have a life where they can shoot pool, interact with one another, and doing something. I think that would be a great start. With the ones that is isolated and withdrawn from the outside world. You know,
and right, or even having a outreach program that would put out and to maybe find a way to be in contact with the ones that, you know, what you just said, that don't like to socialize, or maybe not to don't like, maybe need to be encouraged to, you know. So where is the outreach programming that comes to encourage the person with a mild mental disorder how to reacclimate himself back into a social setting? I think that would be a very good, actually it would be a very good spending of taxpayers' dollars, first of all. Since they use them for all other kind of programs and give themselves a bonus at the end of the year. I just think that would be very beneficial to the people because if you're very young and you have health challenges and you're not doing anything, then I guess that could be a very, you know, sad life because you don't feel like you fit in any place.
Well, if you remember the system back in it, 70 and 80, I think, when there was a lot of alcoholism in people's world, they was able to get on disability because they was an alcoholic. Well, in the 90s, they kicked them all off and didn't even and stopped building a lot of alcoholic places to put them. You know. And then from there, they was on their own. So I just feel now this is another group of people that they have because they don't have, you know, Social Security doesn't have any program or any limitation for the money they giving these people. They just give them to them. And they can go buy whatever they want, guns, drugs, or whatever. You know, they don't even go back to see if they have improved or anything.
No, see, that's what I mean. See, it seemed like the money would be much more well spent to, at least if the person just had and I'm sure they have some type of social worker or even some type of mentor. And if that person was more involved with them placing them in some type of social environment, that would be very beneficial to the individual. And I wonder, and that's something that should be advocated for.
I agree with you 100%, absolutely. Okay. You know, but where do you start at? That's That's the thing, you know. And most of these, what they wait into, most of these young people commit a crime, go to jail, and they take them off disability. And some of them never go back home. So there you, you know.
Well,
so we have a system that is failing our children.
And see, that's what I was going to ask you. So when you start talking about, that's we're talking about what the system is doing to them now. When you were coming up, I know you mentioned a lot of, you know, just like violence or maybe a lot of mental challenges that, that was in your own family growing up, and you had to make a choice early on. You know, you said some of the things you didn't know because you grew up in it. And then maybe you maybe got tired of being you know, treated a certain way, so you rebelled or you would go and stay with a neighbor because you started realizing, hey, I don't think I like being treated this way. So,
right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And with that being said, was there any outlets for you other than the neighbor house that you had went to? Was there any,
no.
Because, you know, to me, black people have such a stigma about mental health, and we always got this thing where we keep our business inside, and so a lot of times we don't get
well,
help.
Well, back in those days that children was allowed to bring someone home with them, but they had to tell their parents. And I was one that would force a person to take me home with them without having a chance to tell their parents. But the people knew my mom and knew that she was had all these children who was trying to raise them by herself. And they knew I was the oldest one and I needed a break. So they would let me stay there maybe a day or so, and then they would send me back home. And to the violence become unbearable again, and I would run away.
Mm-hmm.
So that took place all the way through my teenage life. And finally my mom moved to Chicago, and the abuse stopped somewhat. It wasn't as bad. But my mom, I think she was bipolar back in those days. They didn't have a name for these things. You know, it's just, and it did it last 20 years or so. I don't know.
Okay.
You know,
did your mom think that, did she think what she was doing was abusive, or was it pretty much like, well, that's the way I was done when I was coming up, so she didn't really see anything wrong with it? Because
Well, most people that deal with this type of these challenges do not feel they are doing anything wrong. They see wrong in others more so in themselves.
Okay.
So no, I don't think that she grew up like that with her mom. Cause her mom seemed to be a very kind, loving type person.
Okay.
It's just back in those days that it was hard for a woman to have a lot of kids and live at home. It wasn't enough space.
Absolutely. And absolutely. Then you say she had, you guys had a big family at that too, correct?
Yeah.
And you say y'all even
had
a big family.
Yeah, my mom had 9 girls and 2 boys.
Ooh. So that's 11 kids. So
yes.
That's a lot of
yes.
stress, okay? No matter
yes.
how you cook that slice that potato, that is a lot of stress, okay? And for those out
yes.
there that's parents, they know that that's a lot of stress to put on somebody, and that's the way a lot of times they handle their stress. They took out their anger or their stress out on their children, okay, or their disappointments in their relationships. They took those out on their children as well. And sometimes when they
right.
do that, they're not even aware. That's the worst part.
Right.
They are doing damage to another human being the same way damage
exactly.
was done to them. I agree.
Exactly.
Did all of the children get, I should say, pretty much punished the same way?
No. It's like two sets of us, and I was the oldest one at home. And, of course, being the darkest one with the short hair, you know, back in those days.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
That's the one.
Yeah, the color struck me.
All of the,
okay.
Yeah. That's okay. The one that did all the hard work, you know. And then I think I was a person that worked with my mom, knowing that she didn't have a man or anyone to help her do this. So I was like a right-hand person to help her maintain the family, you know, to put food on the table, to cut the wood and all of this. So
and you were the one she always counted on, wasn't it?
Yes.
Were you the one she always depended on?
Depended on, and I'm the one she always treated the worst.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Okay.
I didn't learn my mom could have been suffering from that until after she had passed.
Absolutely.
And I started learning more about the family. Because I had a behavior problem at the time myself. You know, growing up in a family that you didn't have enough, and then you have in a family where you don't have the skill to make the money to support them, and you know, it became very depressing.
And you know what? And I see three callers on the line. I see y'all out there. I feel you. If y'all want to tap in, all you got to do is hit the blue button, and I'll know to hit you and that you want to make a comment. I really want to really examine what Maddie was just talking about in terms of learned behaviors, because there's a part of me that believes that growing up in an environment like the hood really creates a lot of mental illness. You know, you have everybody to me is energy and they spirits and they move through this life a different way. Some of us are more soft spirits. Some of us are hard spirits. Some of us are, you know, more aggressive. And here's the point. When you're in a hood, it's just that if you are a spirit that is kind or is, how should you say, mellow, pretty laid back, that can be a very detrimental sign of weakness in the community. And that will allow people to come and peck off you and try to pick at you and poke you until you're dead, like a carcass, keep feeding off you. So
yes.
You have to build
yes.
a persona and be aggressive, which is really not who you really want to be, but you have to almost give yourself a whole new personality to navigate through this ghetto. Because if you're walking down free, they might think you Humpty Dumpty somebody. And next thing you know, they're trying to crack you in the head and rob you. And I think that is sad. So when you really think about mental disorders, sometimes you're like, sometimes the environment can create a fearfulness in the person. The environment can create the aggressiveness in the person. It can create all kinds of things that, you know, I don't think that a lot of us are given credit for, because there's a lot of people in the hood that are sick, and some of them have to make themselves that way just to survive, just to walk down
yes.
the street.
Yeah.
Because otherwise their kindness is going to be taken for weakness. And so there you go. They got to put on a persona, which is like a schizophrenic or whatever you want to call it. They got to take on another identity to walk out that door. And that's really amazing when you really think about that.
Because most of these people are very vulnerable. And if someone is what they would refer to as a street person, would easily take advantage of them. Because
right.
not only are these people vulnerable,
right.
but they are very
Absolutely.
Giving too.
Absolutely.
So these are people that most so-called street knowledge folks
on. Mm-hmm.
In the hood.
See what I mean? Uh-huh. Absolutely. Instead of wrapping their arms around them and saying, hey, you know, this person might need a little help. They might not be as swift as, you know, or might not, they move a little slower. Oh, no. they use that direct, what you say, weakness, in their opinion, and
right.
take it as, hey, we got to get rid of this person, or take advantage of it.
These special drug dealers that I find, that find that most of these people said get checks and stuff, and they are in the hood, and these are the people they want because it's easy money for them. And you know, after a while, these people start to feel taken, and they may react in a violent way because they,
right.
you know, they feel that at first they feel that these people really care about them by giving them the drugs and what have you and all of this, until they find out that they are being used. It may take months, weeks, months, years before it happens.
Right. Right.
You know, and it causes a problem with the family member that is trying to care for this person, you know. And you don't have anyone you can go to because they are trained. Most of the case managers today are trained to focus on the person, not the history of the person. It's
okay.
The person is to become a number in the medication and stuff. So, you know.
That's exactly. You become a number and a thing.
You become a number and a thing.
Uh-huh. A number and a thing. Absolutely. Because they don't just cease to look at you as a human being. I mean, because, you know, so it's almost as if, you know, you have a number and you're just a thing, and we're going to just get by dealing with you. What next? Because anytime you're not even considering that if you have a mental challenge, that you just may need something other than a pill or a shot, then that, you know, I go to show you. At one time, they released them from facilities, and I think just put them out on the street, made them all homeless. So there is no love for the mentally ill, or what they consider anybody with a challenge. There's no love for you. And this is the society.
They claim that they have protection out there for them. And some people do become successful in some of the program they have. You know,
right.
I just feel like you said earlier, most of the program, our program fit one and for all, you know. They are not tailored for individual. It's for to treat them all the same.
All the same.
And you can't. Yeah. So I just don't see a program out there that helps. Really helped me from the time I started when I was 16. Taking medication and going to therapists and all of these things. I found I got more help from people in the streets than I did from the professional.
That's very interesting.
Because somehow, most people have walked down that same street and know the feeling, or they seem to understand you. Mental challenge people seem to understand one another, you know, and somehow we seem to have compassion for each other.
And that's why I couldn't. And that's the compassion, to know that this is another person that is pretty much going through the same thing and being the same way, going through the same thing pretty much that I am. Even if it's not, this is what the tie that binds us, even though we may have a different diagnosis or a different way of life, but there's something that together and it binds us as well. You know, it's like every time we start getting good into the conversation, we start running up on that time where we have to shut it down. But because these conversations